This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to www.accessradiotaranaki.com.
It's time for real stories from those who make our region and our country their home. Time for Making Yourself at Home, thanks to the support from the Ethnic Communities Development Fund.
Hello, hello, here it's Access Radio Taranaki, 104.4 FM, your voice, your choice. We are here in the studio making ourselves at home. It's Monday, 11 a.m. And as each Monday, we are doing our show today. So good morning, Amna, and good morning, Brendan. How are you today?
I'm great, thank you.
Good morning, Alina. How are you? I'm well.
You're well, right?
Yeah. What a morning.
What a morning, yes. And as usual, each Monday morning at 11 a.m., we making ourselves at home, and we have today a wonderful guest that I'm looking forward to interview today. But first, I would like to say thank you to Amna for joining me and co-hosting the show together. Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you here. Hope you had a good day so far.
I had a lovely time, and it was such a good experience. I think I should be thankful to Clara for taking her vacation.
Yes.
And let me experience this. But no, I had a good time, and it was quite a big learning experience for me.
Yeah.
Got to meet so many interesting personalities.
Yes, yeah. As our listener know, Amna is co-hosting with me for already 6 weeks maybe together, or?
I think I'm just left with another week.
Another week and hopefully more weeks.
And then Clara's back and I'm off.
Yes. Yeah, so Amna is originally from Pakistan, and I'm originally from Romania, and we run this show for almost 5 years. And I'm happy to introduce today to our guest, Brendan Pitwood. So I know Brendan for maybe half a year, something like that.
It's not long.
It's not so long time, but I sometimes feel like I know him for a lifetime because we do such an intense work together. So I know Brendan because he's my trainer for craniosacral therapy. So I started with Brendan doing the course in February this year, and we already done 4 modules of craniosacral therapy. And I'm very excited to know more about him. I have some questions for him, but I'm sure he also has some questions for us, because always when you ask Brendan something, he replies with a question.
I've been known to do that.
Yes. So Brendan, when did you start the Taranaki Therapeutics, and what brought you into that?
Oh my goodness. Well, I suppose if I was to go right back to the beginning, my journey into therapies began probably in 1992.
Yeah.
And I started studying massage back then. Actually, prior to that, I was a motor mechanic, and I used to build performance engines and things like that. So it was I just knew that I didn't want to be doing that long term. So I just thought I'd try out learning massage, so I did that. And then after a period, I realized that the results I was getting wasn't sufficiently long-term for me. So there was got to be something more here. And it was at that time my aunt and uncle were visiting from England. Mm. Now, these are people I didn't know. Anyway, they walked in the back door, and my uncle shook my hand, and he just looked at it. He said, I'll speak with you later. I thought, that sounds a bit ominous, isn't it? Anyway, he just said, look, you've got an ability in your hands. This is what you're going to do with it. And so I began studying again. And I started studying bodywork, more mechanical bodywork. It turns out that he was an osteopath in England, and he had been for 48 years.
Wow, amazing.
Yeah. And as a side note, I did a generational impact study as part of another training that I did. And this fellow had lots of interesting information in support of that study. And he told me that our family had been involved in the healing arts back into the 14th century.
Mm.
So he said, it's a good path. It's either that or we're slow learners.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, and so that began that part. And then even after that bodywork training, I still thought, do you know what? There's something more that didn't quite consider maybe the spiritual nature of us completely, or as much as I would have liked. And then I was introduced to the biodynamic model of craniosacral therapy. And let's know that there are two models. There's a biomechanical model and a biodynamic model. Okay, so as part of my bodywork training, I was instructed in the biomechanical model, which is a doing type of approach. Mm. You know, you make an assessment, a diagnosis, and you'd actually implement a change. With the biodynamic model, it's not like that. It gets the system to do it for itself. So anyway, I was introduced to this therapy probably in 98 or something like that perhaps. And so I did an introductory weekend in Wellington, and I loved it that much I did every intro in the country.
Wow.
So
amazing.
There was not an introductory seminar that was hosted that I wasn't a part of. Thus my passion for the work.
Wow, amazing.
So I did. The tutors came from England, you see. We didn't have an educational faculty on the ground here in New Zealand, so we had to create it. So the teachers came from England. We did this two-year diploma training. And I loved it that much that I then assisted on the next training,
mm-hmm.
and the next training, and the next training. And I just gradually learnt to teach. And that's how we developed stillness trainings in Taranaki Therapeutics.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of came out of all of that passion for sharing this work, because it's extraordinary and it is so far-reaching.
Yeah, it is. And, I mean, I can subscribe to that. I think it's a life-changing training. And the way it works, the way the body works, I didn't know that the body can heal itself when you give the presence and when you are there for the other person. So, yeah, it's a great work that you are doing.
It's not, well, yeah, the presence is a huge part, but it's actually understanding what's going on inside the presence that is useful.
Mm.
You know, it's like our body has more memories in our brain in terms of experience. And so it's like, well, how do we develop a field or a relationship that supports us to understand that? Which is why we spend so much time. Our training in particular has a strong focus on personhood as well as the intellectual elements of the work, right? So yes, we're going to study anatomy and physiology, but we're also going to study the EQ component, or the emotional intelligence component.
Okay.
Because for me, if that's not attended to, there's going to be stuff you'll miss, right? Because as soon as a trigger emerges, we start focusing on that and we lose that depth of presence that we can apply in this situation.
So basically, if you're struggling emotionally, that affects you physically as well. So you cannot tackle one issue without tackling the other one. So you can't ignore the both go side by side.
They do go side by side. And the other part of this approach that I really acknowledge and appreciate is that it's unique to each individual. You know, so we're not going to make a judgment about, is the physiologic component more important than the emotional, or vice versa? Mm. It's just like everybody's got their own calculation of how they've arrived at this place.
Mm.
And our job is simply to make sense of it with them.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's quite amazing, right?
Yeah, rather than going, like, go for therapy as well, not denying that. But I think, you know, how I never used to believe this, but when people used to say that your muscles tend to hold on to traumas or they have that memory. And over time, I realized that I tend to hold a lot of stress in my shoulders. And every time I'm stressed or even for the slightest thing, I know my shoulders are the first thing that would start stiffing up and yeah. I'll get pains and aches. But it's so interesting to know that how our body can function and how our body stores this trauma or just
It's super fascinating. Yeah. I mean, there are so many layers to all of this. You know, there's information in every cell of our being. You know, the craniosacral therapy, when it was first, well, founded, I suppose, by our friend William Garner Sutherland, he decided that it was going to be called craniosacral therapy because he considered that the primary intelligence in our being was contained in the cranium, the brain, the spinal cord down to the sacrum, thus craniosacral. And so that's where the primary respiratory mechanism is and the beginning of intelligence. Well, what we know now is that reorganizational intelligence lives in every cell of our being, all the 50 to 75 trillion of them. And so we can listen anywhere for the body to tell its story. So what we know is that everything in our body is moving all of the time, right? And so movement patterns alter with experience. So we have like a classical motion dynamic and we've got a compensated motion dynamic. And depending on whether it's an emotional experience or physical or whatever, it's going to alter how the body chooses to hold itself, express itself, from a posture, for instance, to how you might use your hands or how you look at the world, to how your stomach functions, for instance. You know, because you get anxious, your
stomach hurts.
Exactly, it doesn't work the same way.
And
so this is a beautiful approach because it is so considerate and non-violent. This is an absolute epitome of a non-violent therapy to me. It's the most respectful I know and artistic. Makes it ideal for working with babies and children. Right?
Yeah. Please elaborate more. Don't stop talking. Please continue. Like, so just can you explain the process as in, is it, in my mind, I'm just imagining, is it like physiotherapy?
No, not at all.
Can you just elaborate a little, like the process, how do you work with your patients or whoever comes to you for the therapy?
Okay, so you're asking what a session might look like?
Yeah.
Okay. So, how about we choose a baby and the parent brings the child in because, let's say, it's unsettled.
Okay.
All right. And maybe it's a bit spilly or colicky, that sort of thing. Now, I have got some additional training on as well as that goes alongside the cranial work. And it's a prenatal and birth therapy. And so I studied that in Santa Barbara, and we'll get to that because it's my absolute passion.
Nice.
All right. No, I'm serious. It just, oh, you'll see. It spins my wheels. And so this little being will have had a particular type of birth process, right? And depending on, interestingly, the baby's perception of the birth process, it will put, we call it a set point. And so in our autonomic nervous system, you're familiar with that? We've got a, okay, so let's brief understanding.
Okay.
Autonomic nervous system, we've got a sympathetic end, a parasympathetic end.
Okay.
Sympathetic, fast. It's more defended response place. It's makes a child function more quickly, right? Parasympathetic end is about rest, relaxation, better digestion, that sort of process.
Okay.
So you can imagine that if a type of birth process that's been a little bit challenging, the set point will be pushed further into the sympathetics. Right? Now, if we understand a little bit about how the sympathetic nervous system works, it's about having a scrap or running away. basically. Right? So we get ready to mobilize, and so what the body's doing is putting energy in arms and legs. So often you find the babies pump their arms or they pump their legs and they're doing things like that. But what that does, of course, is when the energy's out there, it's not in the midline, right? So there's only so much, and so if the distribution goes out that way, then this is going to suffer. And so maybe the diaphragm will be a bit tight. Maybe the wind will get trapped. Maybe the baby will be upset as a result. And so what we can do is listen to the baby's system and help it slow. There's a little process inside what we're doing here. And part of our cranial work is very much about establishing the most beautiful relationship, one that listens to every level of a person's being. And so when I listen to a baby and I make a very gentle physical contact with it, I can feel what's happening in the baby's system, because that's, you know, what's what we're doing. We develop this palpatory sense, or this ability to feel in our hands, that is like no other. Right? So you can feel tissues moving beneath your hands. You can feel bones moving, breathing. It's extraordinary. And so when we're listening to the baby and we can get a sense of how quickly maybe it's moving inside its nervous system, I might say on my inside, I see you can do that. I wonder if you can do this. And I show it slow in me. And the baby goes, oh. And all of a sudden the baby takes a breath. The diaphragm softens. It's absolutely stunning. And that's just a super basic understanding of what's going on here. But ultimately it's the relationship that makes the difference.
And the presence, and I think.
Right.
For the therapist, right? Because if the therapist is there with the baby, not, you know, somewhere else, you know, doing other chores, then it counts. And I think this can see, you know, whenever we talk with somebody, you know, if I talk with you, but I may be with my thoughts at work, then you can feel my presence, that I'm not there with you.
Yeah.
And when I'm there with you, what kind of impact does it make for our relationship, right?
True. That's a super interesting thing that you've just sort of brought up there, like the quality of presence and the consistency of it.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that we notice when people have additional trainings. Sometimes they start thinking about what else might be happening, or what they could do, or what they could bring in. But the shift in the person's consciousness and presence is actually felt through their hands. And we can determine that, because what we've done in our trainings previously is I've set up an environment where we've had people on tables, for instance, with a therapist, and I've shown the therapist images on a screen, some that are difficult things to see and other things that are nourishing things to see, and the people on the table can feel the difference in their hands. So quality of presence is... it's super important.
Yeah.
But not just quality, consistency. So consistent attunement and availability right through that spectrum. That's what we're after.
And because you were, the show it's called Making Yourself at Home, and you were also talking about preconception, you know, and what happens before the baby comes into the womb and it starts forming. Can you tell us a little bit, because I'm quite intrigued about this, you know, how the baby is making himself at home, or how the parents, when they, before conception and when the baby is coming, you know, what is there happening and what are the things
that...
What's
up, the question?
Yeah.
Goodness. Okay, so how about, let's put this in a little bit of a framework here.
Yeah.
The... bringing it home, or however you see
that. Yes.
So I went to Santa Barbara and studied the prenatal and birth therapy. And it's a, it was a beautiful, God, it was so creative and artistic and just stunning. It was a training that was based on the amalgamation or the bringing together of a number of different approaches or therapies. So pre and perinatal psychology, definitely one of them. So I've belonged to a research association for probably 20-something years now. So I keep myself up to date with the understandings about the little person's experience from preconception, ultimately to three. So that training, yes, pre and perinatal psychology, also osteopathic and chiropractic philosophy, and so that's very much about understanding and trusting the body's innate capacity to move itself toward homeostasis and balance or wellness, generally, right? And but also somatic psychotherapy, so understanding how the body works and what story it holds, right? And so we put those things together. That's a brief. But okay, so we go back to how the little one's making itself at home. There's a... that's a big question.
Only big questions today.
And I was telling Brendan that Elena is not going to ask you big questions. It's just going to go with the flow and we'll just have a normal conversation. But here you go. Maybe the first time.
So, this process is fascinating. Ray Castellino, who was my teacher in America, he wrote about this and the concept of the consciousness coming into being, either being brought in or choosing to come. Now, in an ideal world, we would have a situation where the consciousness is able to choose.
Yeah.
Right? So I'll give you an example of how we did it, maybe, because Joanna and I, we have IVF twins. They're 18 now, and they're awesome people. But 2 years before they were born, Jo and I went to the beach, and this touches my heart.
It's amazing, huh?
So we went to the beach, and you know, we have a Christian belief in it, right? And so we prayed and we said, God, we believe we're ready. And so we embarked upon the journey of inviting two little people into our lives. So even in the IVF process, our aim was to have the whole process be as conscious as possible. And so even when the eggs were harvested, they called it, and put in a petri dish, I went to them and I said, your mum and I want all of you guys, but we can only take two, and you have a choice. And one became unviable, just like that. And we only had 4 eggs total. It was a small harvest. But what we were doing, our aim was to give choice right from the beginning. And so when the two blastocysts were transferred into Joe's uterus, on the way home, we parked on the side of the road, we put our hands in her tummy, and we said, we are so glad you guys are here, and you still have a choice. I wanted them, we wanted them to have choice every step of the way. And they chose to be here, all right. They're larger than life.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah, you know. So making yourself at home really is a process of mutual cooperation and support for the parents and the children. It's not one or the other. It's how we do it, right? It's the communication, it's attunement. You would hear a lot of information or encouragement for mums and dads to talk to their baby in utero, right?
Yeah.
They get used to the sounds, the music, the voices. What I teach people to do is to listen for the baby's voice too. Make it a conversation. And it makes a difference. That level of attunement that can go on with your little being as you're nourishing it and bringing it into the world is extraordinary.
Yeah. Wow. It's an amazing process that you are going through, and thank you for sharing that. You know, it's a big emotions, and regarding our course, you know, because the last time we discussed about conception, you know, and what happens in the first 2 weeks. So I made today a presentation at Toastmasters about that.
Excellent.
It was quite interesting because I was going through, you know, when... before conception and what happens in our body. And I was also presenting because I shared with Brendan my story, you know, what happened before I was conceived, and that my mother was, she was not, so the doctors told her she's not allowed to make any babies because she will lose her eyesight, so she will get blind. And that information, you know, that she knew about it, but she decided to have at least one baby. Mm. And, you know, the stress that she was going through, you know, if this will happen, will I get blind or not? You know, what will happen to my baby? And that it was also a cesarean because she was not allowed to give natural birth. So how much impact had this on me, you know, and my nervous system? And was so interesting that Brendan was bringing that up to me and for me to understand myself better. Mm. Right?
That's the plan, right? I mean, there is nothing that doesn't have some sort of impact. Everything is information, and everything is going to add to the calculation of how you do life.
Calculation, right? Yeah.
Of how you do life.
Wow, amazing. Yeah.
It will impact your physiologic responses. It'll impact your perception, right? It'll impact your attitudes, your resilience, let's say. Mm-hmm. It's all in there.
Yeah.
This is one of the reasons I love this developmental field.
Yes.
Right? Because all of these experiences from conception to three get written into your brainstem. Mm-hmm. And they add to how you do life. They, like, underpin it. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, we have other experiences that occur after that, but seldom do therapies go before birth and get curious about, well, what on earth was happening in here? This is the reason that I think this training is so extraordinary. It gives us an opportunity to look beyond words, you know, into movement patterns and physiologic expressions, experiences, feelings, things that occur way before.
And also culture, right? Like, it's so important what happens in the country that you are born. Like, I realize, you know, I was looking on the picture. I was presenting a picture with me when I was small, and I was not smiling in the picture. Now, in our days, you know, all the kids in the pictures are smiling, and you see everybody, you know, with a big smile on their faces. But I was like, just like...
It's such an interesting thing that you brought up about culture. In our culture, even though, like, the new generation does not believe in it, maybe my mom and my grandparents and their parents believed in it.
And what?
That if you, when a woman is expecting, just look at cute baby pictures. Look at adorable baby pictures. And that way, you'll absorb all the positivity and the cuteness of those baby pictures, and that'll in return become a part of your unborn child, the child in your... So that was one of the cultural concepts, that if you look at all the positive stuff, if you look at babies smiling, and because if you, I'll try finding a picture. In most of the homes, people would put up these random pictures of babies.
Oh, really?
And when the woman is expecting, she would usually look at the picture. Oh, I wish my baby would look like that. Fair, cute, and chubby. And she kind of is trying to manifest that into her... unborn child.
Could you imagine, a little challenge here, could you imagine what that says to the baby that you want it to look like, those photos?
Mm.
You know, right here, the baby's getting a message that all of a sudden, oh, well, what if I don't?
Yeah.
Yes.
You know? Mm. Maybe I won't be wanted, or maybe they won't appreciate me the same way.
Mm.
So I like to consider encouraging the parent to be able to connect to the joy that the little one is bringing inside as opposed to outside. Because it'll all be an experience for them.
And... I'm a Muslim, and in our religion, like, the whole idea is to just stay positive. you don't know what's coming. You don't know, even though the baby is alive, you don't know whether when you'll give birth, whether the baby will stay alive or not, whether it's a boy or a girl. You, for now, you don't know anything. But just be thankful and be positive about it.
Okay, so that's a great idea, yeah. And I really support that. Mm. Sometimes it's really hard for people to do that.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. That at times it's people have these expectations that, no, I just want a perfect package to come out of me. Mm. I just want this. And they start stressing out. Yes. And I think that stress kind of impacts the pregnancy and the baby as well.
You can know that it does. Mm. There's a lot of research that tells us about mums and dads' experience on the outside and the impact on the little one's nervous system. Mm. It's definitely a thing.
Mm.
Definitely. A lot of the work that I do, particularly with mums and dads who are pregnant or becoming pregnant, is to work through their own attachment history.
Mm.
And if we can do that, then, you know, we can set a positive intention and we can develop this trust in nature so that mum's outcome can be as closely aligned to a natural experience as possible. And absolutely, sometimes interventions are required or there's going to be additional support, right? But if we start at the beginning, what we know, the incidence of intervention decreases the more that we have a congruent positive outlook.
Mm.
And that's what we're looking for, is congruence in it. I don't want to fudge it and just go, oh, well, I should fake it till I make it. Well, that can work to a point.
Mm.
But if we can get it so that it is actually an embodied belief, that makes the difference for me.
Yeah. But when, you know how they say that once you've given birth, you some moms go through post-traumatic depression as well. And all those hormones, at times, some moms, they don't want to hold their child. And they take time accepting their child. How does this come in help? Like, how can this help new moms or babies in bringing their relationship?
Okay, so what we know then is that if we start the process earlier, then we're going to have an established relationship before baby's born.
Mm.
So the birth process itself simply is a transition from inside to outside. It's not like, oh, all of a sudden I've got a baby.
Yeah.
You know, if we are in relationship right through its gestational period, then we've got a relationship that starts right at the beginning.
Mm.
And hopefully, even at conception, through the lovemaking process. You know, imagine having that sort of awareness that says, okay, we've made love, we've done that, and it's a funny thing to talk about, but holding that thought that we may have a little one in our presence.
Mm.
We don't know that for certain yet, but let's behave like there is.
Mm.
You know,
be mindful
of that, right?
Mm.
Absolutely, mindfulness. And so if we have that, then you talked about postnatal depression and those sorts of things. What some of the research has shown us is that the more we have this established relationship, and if we can have made sense of the attachment styles and history that the parents have, then when the little one is born, the relationship becomes stronger. So the attachment to mum is going to have the impact of helping her build more oxytocin, the bond gets closer, and the incidence of postnatal depression drops away.
Mm-hmm.
And so this preparation phase right up front is really super important.
Mm.
And it impacts not only the birth process, but how the relationships are established afterward. But it also impacts how well dad can be the supporter and hold that family unit.
Yeah.
Right? Because often, you know, guys can experience this disconnect as well, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And so that's not helpful.
Yeah.
We really need dads right in amongst it, and I really support that.
Absolutely. And I think we do tend to, what's the word, like, ignore the dads at times, like how what they're feeling or what they're going through, because all the focus is on the moms and the baby. But the father is also going through that process. And I think, unfortunately, men do tend to get ignored in such situations, like emotionally, obviously.
I think that's a really important point you've just said there, is that the focus, well, traditionally the focus is on empowering mum through this birth process experience, and that's an absolute good thing to do, right? Mm. Seeing a woman in her power in that scenario is extraordinary. I couldn't do it. You know, it's outrageous. All power to women in my head. And a lot of the information that I see, or you know, groups online, there's quite a strong focus toward the mother, not to baby or dad. So I often see, let's say we need to reduce the incidence of intervention. Well, that's good. Well, how about we make it not necessary? That would be ideal.
Mm. Yeah.
Right? But it's not talked about in terms of how an intervention might impact baby. Mm. It's only talked about in how it might impact mum. Mm. Like an induction is going to challenge a baby's control system. And it's not great for mum to experience either. And it's all based on the fact that maybe we can't even be trusting the baby's timing.
Mm.
It could be that simple. And, of course, there are complications that really need appropriate support. I mean, I'm not undermining that, but there's some options out there.
And you were also talking about attachment, and I think we touched a little bit in our craniosacral course that this kind of things, for example, if there is a trauma in birth, right, if the child had to be taken out with a forceps, or a cesarean had to happen. And you said that through the craniosacral, these things can be healed, or is there something that cranio is helping with?
Okay. I'm cautious with the terminology of healed, but what we can do is make sense of them and how they impact not only a physiologic function, but also behaviors. And so this is our approach, is to make sense of and support some understanding to occur for the baby's body systems, and eventually it will translate into character structure. This is one of the reasons I love the study of the pre and perinatal psychology, because I can put these things together and go, okay, so we've got this, and how can I offer the baby some power? Well, when the baby's pushing on its legs, I can just take a little bit of resistance on its feet and say, you can do this. And so when you slow down the field that you're working in, it opens a door to a greater access to the brainstem. And so they get to feel it more. And so all of a sudden they go, oh, I'm part of this. I'm not separate from it. And all of a sudden you can say, I can feel myself, I'm here, this is good. So there's a whole relaxation that can occur in the little nervous systems. It's a beautiful thing.
Wow, amazing. So you said you're very passionate about the prenatal, and can you tell us what do you enjoy the most, or what are the things that...
I think what I enjoy the most is how vastly useful it is, because not only can it work with intergenerational imprinting. Mm. Like something that you got from your grandma, for instance.
Yeah.
I mean, culturally, we come from a difficult place in the world, and there will be imprints that come through.
Yeah.
And so there is an opportunity to uncouple some of that patterning, to free you or to liberate you from what it is that's being held. So it could be that. It could be working with even supporting mums and dads to be able to become pregnant first up. So maybe pregnancies haven't held, there were miscarriages. And perhaps there would be some sort of belief that says my environment's not safe to bring a little one into.
Mm, yeah.
And so we can work with that for parents post-birth. Or maybe there are challenges on the way through gestation. There's so many layers and levels that can be worked with. It's absolutely thing.
Yes, and I feel like craniosacral is something that you can't explain so much with words. It's more like you have to experience it, you know?
Yeah, it is not easy to explain.
No.
Bottom line. Well, not the way that I think that we do it, because it's much more about how to enliven and develop the relational field as opposed to applying technique. You know, traditionally, when you go and see a practitioner of sorts, it's going to be because they're going to do something to you, for you. Right, and they're going to utilize their intelligence to impact a change, you know, to make that happen. Whereas this is about, well, how can I get alongside you and support you to do the work in a really skillful fashion? You know, it's like, how do I empower you the best way I can by being with you here through thick and thin, doesn't matter what it is. That's the definition of empathy to me. It doesn't matter. I can be with you, right?
Whatever. In the present moment, right?
In the present moment. Mm. Yeah, so it's not what people are used to. The number of folks who might come through the door and go, I need you to fix me. So, yeah, guess again. How about we do this together?
Yeah. And when people are coming to you, what kind of challenges they have or what they want to be fixed for?
Mm. Oh, my goodness. It could be,
Give us one of the most challenging one that you had.
That's reoccurring for you in patients. Like patients are coming with the same issue or the same problem.
Do you know, it can be, I'll give you a range actually. So maybe grief is something, you know, for a lost loved one. That can be a thing. Maybe it's anxiety where the nervous system doesn't quite know how to access slow. Maybe it's a digestive thing. It could be aches and pains in the body. Maybe there's some tightness between the shoulders that's creating some compression, and that's affecting digestion. Who knows? Right? Regularly people will come with a particular scenario of what it is they'd like support with, but the body has got a completely different idea in terms of how to get there. You know, so we have this inherent treatment plan that we interact with that takes us on a journey to eventually get to what it is that the client's looking for. Mm. So there's emotional stuff and there's physiologic stuff and there's pain-oriented body stuff.
Yeah. Mm.
Those would be the main
things. Do you see any, what is the difference between craniosacral and osteopathy or other techniques that are out there?
Well, so osteopathy, founded back in 1874 by this fellow Andrew Taylor Still, he had four primary principles of the body being a unit of anatomy and physiology, but also spirit, soul, and physical being. And the second principle is that structure and function have a reciprocal relationship. Third one is that the body has the innate capacity to heal itself and move toward homeostasis and balance, that sort of thing. And what biodynamic craniosacral therapy does is take that third principle as close to an absolute as we can get it. So trusting that inherent intelligence to go to work, and we offer an environment where it can do that. So we have the understandings, but we don't apply technique or adjustments in that scenario at all. Right. Mm. It's about opening the door for the intelligence in the system to turn up and go to work, which it does.
By itself, right?
Supported by itself.
Supported by the practitioner, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how many sessions are required, or it depends on the kind of pain, aches, trauma, emotional grief, loss, whatever is affecting them. It kind of depends on that?
It does depend on lots of things. For instance, Okay. Sometimes with the babies, maybe one session is regularly all that's needed, sometimes two or three. It depends on what they've experienced coming into the world and what's going on around them. If it's, oh, I'll give you an interesting one. Regularly, farmers get this compression between their shoulder blades, which can create numbness and tingling in their hands, right? And what I observe about that is often that can take between 1 and 4 sessions to resolve. That's my observation. You know, so, like I say, it depends on what it is and how long it's been there, and but also a person's willingness to turn up for themselves. Because, you know, people have defences and resistance, and some people would maybe listen to this and go, what on earth are you on about? No. Right?
Yeah.
And others would go, actually, I quite like the sound of being supported to be in charge of my own process. And, you know, I like that level of involvement. It gives me some sort of determination over myself.
Yeah. Mm.
And so those people are awesome to work with.
Yeah.
They really get it.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of necessary as well to have, like, to own yourself, to own that power. Like, you have that power. And sometimes we rely on others to please be our support system. This is what I'm going through, and I want to vent, and I want to dump all this on you. Instead of saying that, okay, no, I need to take the reins in my hand. And I want to do this for myself. That's the part where at least I know that I tend to struggle, that if I'm getting anxious, I just want somebody to be there. Or I just want to talk to somebody that, I don't know why, but this is what I'm feeling. Okay, now I feel fine because I've told you everything and I've just dumped my trauma on them. Instead of just taking that ownership that, okay, no, I need to help myself, but what do I do?
So this And there's a fellow, Eugene Gendlin, who developed a process called focusing. Mm. And that's sort of what is useful in that scenario, where we can take our attention inward and go, well, what's my experience of this right now? What is it I'm feeling?
Mm.
And take your attention to what those feelings actually are.
Mm.
The definition of a feeling is a need being met or unmet.
Mm.
That's it. And so when we have that level of curiosity, all of a sudden, when we identify what they actually are, it shifts the energy out of our limbic system into our prefrontal cortex. And so all of a sudden, yes, there's a regulation, but also our capacity to connect deepens. Mm. It's a beautiful process.
Yeah, it is, right? And it's amazing. And I'm so happy that you can talk for hours about it, right?
It reminds me, listening to you talk, though, part of what we also include in our trainings is a nonviolent communication that was developed by fellow Marshall Rosenberg. And that is a supremely empathetic, responsible model of communication that I know. And we include that because it is so supportive of helping people get to the bottom line very quickly.
Yeah, and it was a great exercise that we did last time with nonviolent communication. And I think just by voicing, you know, what you feel regarding a challenging situation,
so
just by voicing it to somebody else, for me was like, I don't even have to talk with that person anymore because I know inside me that it's solved for me.
So by nonviolent, you mean that you don't get defensive about it? Like if...
It's a little more complex than that.
Yeah. Let's make it more complex, Brandon.
I think I need to come to this session.
So nonviolent communication, ultimately, is aimed at being able to present your truth, your experience, in a way that maintains connection with another. Okay, and so if... For me, for instance, I have a thought that runs in the background for me, which says, how can I make life that bit more wonderful for you? And so I do my best to be able to hear what it is you share with me.
Mm.
Even if it's difficult, I will try and interpret it as a version of either please or thank you. You know, even if you know you're frustrated with me and you're angry, okay, what is she really trying to communicate to me? It would be something like, I'm struggling, please help me.
Mm-hmm.
And so firstly, that gives me a position to be able to hear you more well.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so we have these elements of narrative that would stimulate or promote disconnection. And they're literally called the four D's of disconnect. And so if we can do our best to not include them in our narrative, we're going to maintain connection more effectively. And the four D's are anything that represents diagnosis or evaluation. You know, because if you put a diagnostic or an evaluative term next to the word you, that person only hears criticism, right?
Mm.
That's not nice for them. So anything diagnostic or judgmental is out. Anything that represents demand. So what does demand mean? Well, demand means I'm unwilling to hear a no, which means I'm going to stonewall the conversation. So we don't want to do that. Okay. There's denial. Mm. So that's like the refusal to believe things could be different or that maybe I have a part in this.
Mm.
And the other one is deserve-oriented narrative. And that would also be making a judgment about what's right for somebody else. You know, you deserve that.
Mm. Yeah, right? You were mean.
Yes.
You fell off the stairs. You deserve it.
Right? Yeah, that's
this
not
is
nice.
What we do with kids, right? Yeah, which is not nice.
And,
yeah.
Obviously, it might be that something good has happened. And you say, yeah, great. You bought yourself a new car. Yeah, you deserve that.
Mm.
So how would you know? Did I not before and I do now?
Mm. Yeah.
People do funny things.
Yeah, it's always when, sometimes when I give compliments to some people, I say, oh, you look so good today. And they say, oh, you mean that yesterday I was not looking good?
Exactly, right.
Yeah, so they're defensive and they're also in denial that...
yes.
Like, I can actually look good, but I think maybe they've not received so many compliments,
right? To receive a compliment is quite difficult, right?
Yeah.
And it's curious, the narrative that runs in people's minds, right?
Yeah. And you were telling us, you were telling me, Brendan, that you were living also a little bit abroad, or you were traveling abroad, right?
So that's where I studied the prenatal and birth therapy in Santa Barbara.
Yes. And because the show is about making yourself at home, I'm curious, how did you manage to, you know, be in a new culture, there were any challenges for you or something
Initially, I didn't like it at all.
Okay.
Yeah. At that stage, when I chose to do that, I'd not long been married. I did a process workshop with Ray on Maui in Hawaii. And to go to the beginning. And that was the most life-changing experience I've ever had in my life. It was outrageous. It was called a womb surround process workshop. That's why I had to go and learn that training. It was completely transformational on every level.
So what was happening there? You made us curious. What was it?
So a womb surround process workshop is where you get to look at your early imprinting and then how that informs what goes on in life.
Yeah.
And so at that particular workshop, I addressed, I didn't actually intend to do that, but what I did end up looking at was the impact of my birth. So I was a twin and my twin didn't make it. And so there were some quite shocking things occurred around all of that, and I don't know that that's useful to share, but to say that I was going to be born 8:30 in the evening, this is what my mother told me, that she went into labour, and she was instructed by the nurse, there's no doctor till tomorrow morning, close your legs. That was it. And she was anaesthetised and left.
Wow.
Yeah, so, you know, that's a That's pretty.
It's quite traumatic, right?
For her.
Baby, and for you, yeah.
Can you imagine what it was like for me? Well, yeah. Squished head. Right?
Yeah.
And so that's being held up all night. And I do not like being held up now.
Wow.
So timing is very important to me.
As we can see.
I'm just winking at Alina because her timing is interesting.
It's always it's opportunity, you know, whenever somebody is challenging you with a time. It's something that you have to learn, right?
That's what you'd like to think. Okay. Yeah, so, yeah. You know, starts there.
Wow. Mm. Yeah. It's amazing, right? Yeah, continue.
Yeah, okay, so I've gotten a little bit off path. So that was what I was learning out of the process workshop. So we facilitate those now, primarily for practitioners.
Mm.
Because what we recognise is that when those early life experiences are integrated and made sense of, the practitioner is able to stay present with more dynamics, with a higher quality of presence than they might otherwise. We've observed it, actually, in our trainings over the years, that the cranial students who have opted to do a process workshop, their capacity for presence and awareness of dynamics and process increases exponentially. So it's a snazzy thing to do, and it's not easy, necessarily. Right? I think it's artistic and beautiful. Some folks find it a little bit challenging only the choice of doing it. Once you're in it and safety is established, it's art.
It is, yeah.
It's okay. Art.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Have a nice day and see you next Monday, same time, same place.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode. For more information and others just like this, head along to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.
This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.